Okay, it's being 8:15. I will call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. And the first order on our agenda is approval of the minutes. We need to approve both.
Do we have a question? Madam Chair, I motion to approve the minutes.
Okay, and do you motion to approve the minutes for the morning and the evening hearings?
I motion to approve both sets of minutes.
Hearing that motion, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. All right, today we are going to complete our presentation of Governor Dayton's proposed budget. So, Representative Marquardt, if you want to, I understand you're going, or you have Commissioner Castilius with us today, and you'll also be having Dr. Tom Melcher and Kevin McKendry.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. I first of all want to thank everyone who could attend last Tuesday night's hearing on the world's best workforce. I really appreciate that. And I also apologize that we didn't have really time for questions or comments, but we will come back in committee and have time to talk more about what transpired in the presentations that night. So we will be spending time in committee, but I just really appreciate everyone again who could make that and attend. Today what I would like to do is continue on House File 630, and my intent will be to go over the remaining articles, I think 3 through 10, and then take any questions from members after that. We need to leave about 45 minutes for testifiers, and then if we have time too, we can come back on comments from members and so forth. But before we start, we have Commissioner Castilius here that would like to provide some kind of opening statement. She was out reading the other day to students when we were presenting this bill on Tuesday morning. So, Commissioner Castilius.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, thank you so much for having me here, members. I know last Tuesday you began to look at the governor's bill, and I think I was here right before this committee, after the governor released it and did a small introduction then. So I'll be brief in my comments today and just share with you a few unique things that I think are pretty special about this bill, and talk about a few of those key aspects of it. We did spend a lot of time on Tuesday night as well, kind of highlighting some of the good items in this bill, as well as how they work backwards from results so that we can get a really strong workforce. And I want to thank Representative Marquardt for calling the hearing and having so many experts and stakeholders from the community to talk about how we get to the end and how we have all our students prepared. I first want to talk about the comprehensive nature of this bill. Not only is it seeking to connect K-12 to preschool, but it also, in the higher ed bill, is looking at higher ed. And so the governor is looking comprehensively at an education system within Minnesota that's P-20, so that all of our students are prepared, and I think that's unique. I think also what is unique in this bill is that it mirrors the needs of our students as well as what is in other bills. Some of you serve on other committees, and you may be hearing education come up in those committees. For instance, public safety has some additional revenue in their bill for a public safety center for our schools, a school safety center. You may hear in the DHS bill some additional work that's being done in investment for high quality child care and our quality rating system. So there's an additional investment there in scholarships, as well as some mental health grants and some student maltreatment grants that are out there. And there's some additional investments in housing and rental insurance so that our students who are highly mobile and homeless are able to stay in their same school, because we know that school stability equals better achievement for kids. So there is this work that was done with the cabinet around where do we want to go with our results and what kind of results do we want to get for our children in Minnesota. And then the commissioners together came and looked at their investments and their requests and their cuts. And then we made recommendations to the governor, and I think the governor really took all that information as he developed this bill. So just a little background on that. Focusing on results, the governor has had the 7-point plan for ever since the second month of his administration. And he said that there, you know, we've been in a deficit situation for all of these years, but he has committed to adding more educational funding for our schools, and he worked with the previous legislature to do that, as well as institute some foundational reforms, and hopefully we'll be able to do that with this current legislature as well, to continue that additional funding and continuing focus on results. So we have four goals. The first is every child ready for kindergarten. The second goal is that they're reading well by third grade. The third goal is that they graduate ready and on time. And the fourth goal is that college is affordable. And that's that whole P20, and that they complete college and that they're work ready. So that's that entire comprehensive nature of this bill. The other thing you'll notice in the K-12 bill specifically is a focus on the achievement gap. Last time I was here, I talked about the faces of children are reflected in this bill, and they really are. We see the fix of integration revenue so that we can focus on the achievement gap and the additional revenue, putting in some accountability into that revenue. Also looking at special ed and trying to get take a step toward fully funding that with an additional $125 million so that also fixes the cross subsidy. That's a real about $180 per pupil increase for our general ed kids as well. So that's a good thing for us to do. Additional revenue for our students who are still striving to learn English, which we know we're becoming more diverse. We're having more students who don't speak English well across the entire state. I'm amazed at how diverse our communities are across the entire state. I find that Greater Minnesota teachers are asking for support and help in this area. And that gets me to my next point about supporting teachers, and our regional center investment is really a unique systemic kind of change item, because teachers learn best from other teachers. And this is a way to look at our reward schools, our celebration schools, find those jewels in your school districts, which you know those teachers, and then have them share their understandings with other teachers and their practices so that then we can spread what works. And it's a small investment, but it's a huge impact. And I think that our teachers in Greater Minnesota and our school districts will feel quite supported, because right now they don't have the resources or capacity to do it on their own. So we're trying to connect and get people collaborating more. You'll also see an earlier investment in pre-K and the alignment there with our early investments there. That includes both pre-K and then the continuation of that learning progression through kindergarten. So in funding of all-day kindergarten, it won't get us all the way there. I wish we had a little more revenue to get us just a little bit more there. But we hope to do that within the 4 years. And so the governor's really looked at a four-year plan to this budget. And you'll see that he's paying off the shift in 2016 and 17. I know a lot of you made commitments and want to pay off that shift now. I'm here to tell you that the governor has a plan to pay that off in 2016. And if we want to put the accelerator on helping our children and closing that achievement gap, our schools need those resources now in our budget. We need to fix special ed. We need to get additional dollars to students who can't speak English. We need to focus on our achievement gap, and we need to support our teachers. And we really need to start earlier in preschool. And without those investments, I think we'll be in a status quo situation. And so the governor has been very clear about that. So in this plan, two more things is we introduce innovation. We are asking schools to be creative with our high school redesign work that I know you've heard about. Also introducing more accountability for performance through our literacy incentive, which we started through the past legislature, and looking at adding graduation rate to that, because we know we've slipped somewhat there, especially for our students of color, and we need to do a better job of getting our kids graduated ready and on time. And the governor's been clear. This is not the last word in this budget. He is looking for your good ideas, too, especially on the revenue side, because if we don't have revenue, we can't do any of these investments for our children. And on Tuesday night, I said that our children only have one childhood, and that childhood is now. We have students in our K-12 system, and our businesses right now are on a very sketchy recovery here in Minnesota, and they need these high school kids to graduate and be able to be employable. So we need to get the resources to our teacher now. We can't lose another decade of our kids of color. We have to, with the demographic shifts that Tom presented to you Tuesday, make sure every single one of our Minnesota kids has what they need to be successful. I want to thank you very much for your time here today. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, and we will be holding our questions until after we hear also from Dr. Melcher and Mr. McKendry. Thank you again.
Madam Chair, yes. If I could call Dr. Melcher and Mr. McHenry up, and they will finish the articles, and then we'll have time for questions and testimony. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Madam Chair and members.
Dr. Melcher.
My name is Tom Melcher. I'm the Director of Finance at the Department of Education. In our Tuesday hearing, we went through Articles 1 and 2 of the Governor's Budget Bill, and today we'd like to begin on Article 3, which begins on page 53 of the bill. Article 3 has some major changes in special education funding. The Governor is recommending an increase of $125 million in special education funding in fiscal year 2015 and later. That would substantially reduce the cross-subsidy for special education across the state, freeing up dollars for school districts in their general education programs. Governor is also recommending allocating a portion of the special education funding based on enrollment data, student data, as well as continuing to fund a portion of the special education based on the excess cost of special education. The special education funding formula, the cost-based portion, would be broadened to include all non-federal costs of special education. Primarily, that would add fringe benefits into the calculation of costs. It would eliminate the caps that we currently have and the proration of the current special education formula, and it would require the serving district to share in a portion of the unfunded cost of special education. So going through the specific items in the bill, the first three sections are technical cross-reference changes that relate to some of the formula changes that are being made, and the first substantive piece of this is in Section 4, which is the definition section on page 60 of the bill. You will see that there is a definition of an annual inflationary increase, which is tied to the Consumer Price Index, and that would be used to adjust the pupil-driven portion of the funding annually based on the rate of inflation and the Consumer Price Index. There's also a definition of non-federal special education expenditures, which essentially is all expenditures that are essential for the school districts to meet the school district's obligation to provide special education and services to students, excluding those portions that are funded with federal funds, and also excluding the general education costs for special education students. The proposed new funding formula is in Section 5 at the bottom of page 60, and what this would do would be to replace the current reimbursement percentage formula with a formula based on the lesser of 70% of the non-federal special education cost or a rate per student. And the rate per student would have several components. There would be an amount based on the total average daily membership of the school district, adjusted for the poverty and the total enrollment size of the district, that would be very similar to the federal special education funding formula that would be used to establish a base level of funding for all school districts across the state. And then in addition to that, there would be the excess cost formula, which we currently have but increased to include the fringe benefits and other costs that are currently not covered in that formula. The the definition of special education aid in Section 6 of Article 3 would combine the initial aid, which would be a pupil-driven aid component, and the excess cost aid into one one appropriation. There would be an annual report that the department would do looking at the cost of special education and reporting back to the legislature options for making adjustments to these pupil-driven aspects of the formula by January 15th of each odd-numbered year. We know that as we begin to provide funding based on data that we get better data from school districts, and so we want to make sure that we're keeping up to date and the legislature is fully informed as to what the cost of special education is by category of special education and what some of the implications might be for funding based on that. Section 11 of the article deals with the excess cost aid formula, and essentially the change there is that we're replacing the current definition of cost, which is limited to teacher salaries, contracted services, supplies, and equipment, with a new definition which is based on non-federal special education costs. So the big change there is that the cost of fringe benefits would be included in the excess cost calculations. On section 12, the same formula structure would be used for excess cost aid, but the portion of general education revenue that would be used as a kind of a subtraction factor would be increased from 4.36% to 4.88% of the district's general education revenue. That is a kind of a quick summary of the Article 3. I do want to point out the repealer section on page 66, which would be repealing some of the aspects of the special education funding that would no longer be needed with the new formula, and also repealing the caps on special education funding so that special education would become a forecasted program rather than a capped program. Article 4 of the governor's budget bill is facilities and technology changes. These are mostly technical changes. Section 1, the debt service appropriation, is updating the statutory standing appropriation for debt service to reflect the latest forecast estimates of what the current costs would be. And then Section 2 is updating the health and safety equalization factor for the proposed change in pupil unit weights. Section 3 would be making an adjustment to the alternative facilities aid that would reallocate the current alternative facilities aid so as to minimize any levy shifts as a result of the other changes in the governor's budget bill. Sections 4 and 5 would again be adjusting equalizing factors and allowances to reflect the changes in pupil unit weights that are being proposed by the governor. And also Section 6 would be making adjustments to per pupil allocations based on the change in pupil weights. Article 5 of the bill deals with nutrition, and the governor is proposing a simplification of the formula for the summer food service replacement aid. We have a $150,000 appropriation for that formula with a very complicated formula, and the governor's recommended that we simplify the formula to allocate that $150,000. So rather than having separate rates for breakfast, lunch, and supplements, we would just have one rate based on the total meal count. There's not a lot of money involved, and it's not worth the complexity of the current system to get $150,000 out across the state. Article 6 deals with accounting, and sections 1 and 2 would pay off the property tax shift in 2017, and sections 3 and 4 is where the aid payment shift would be paid off. You'll see on page 73, lines 15, that the aid payment shift would be at 88.8%. 88.5%, excuse me, in fiscal year 2016, and it would be at 90% in 2017 and later. You'll also see a change in Section 4 that relates to another little shift that's less well known than the other shifts we have, which requires us currently to base the excess cost aid for special ed on 74% of the entitlement. So what we end up doing right now is we're paying 82.5% of 74% of the excess cost aid entitlement. What this would do, because we would be combining the excess cost aid with the regular special education aid, we've recalculated that to be 97.4% of the combined special education and excess cost aid entitlement. So that takes you through Article 6, and then I believe, Article 7 is the library article, and this is just appropriations. Based on current law, there are no changes being proposed by the governor there. And Kevin will pick up with Article 8.
Yeah, Article 8.
Mr. McHenry.
Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Article 8 is the early childhood education article. In the beginning, the main change in this article is dealing with the early childhood scholarships. Right now, there's $3 million per year allocated for early childhood scholarships to high-quality areas. This bill would expand the access. Increase it by about $22 million per year. So the increase would be about go from 1.5% of eligible children to about 15% of eligible children to participate in this program. Basically, what this would do is for families that have the certain amount of income, not less than 47% of the state median income. In the current calendar year, they could document their child's participation in free and reduced lunch. They would be eligible to participate. Once the family applies and they're awarded a scholarship, they have 12 months to use that scholarship. The scholarship would be up to $4,000 that could be eligible. And also, in addition, paragraph D, it says that the scholarship wouldn't be counted towards their earned income or the family's earned income. As far as preschool and pre-kindergarten eligibility, right now the plan would be we want to have these scholarships tied to high quality. So providers that are working towards their quality rating towards a 3- and 4-star rating would be eligible to use these scholarships. And then beginning in July 1st of 2014, the providers must have a 3- or 4-star rating. I think the idea on this is that a lot of the studies that you see on early education and the return on investment for how the students perform, the key is that it has to be linked to high-quality early education. So that's the main change in that article. Otherwise, as you go through Section 2, it's continuing appropriations in early childhood. The same thing goes. Article 9 is a prevention article. There are no changes. These are just continuing the appropriations, as is in Article 10 on self-sufficiency and lifelong learning. As we get to Article 11, there are a few changes included. One included is the School Climate Center and the School Climate Council. Those are in Sections 1, 2, and 3. The idea behind this is that the School Climate Council would be a multi-agency effort of individuals working on providing best practices and evidence-based research to help schools with training, to help schools to provide a safe learning environment for children. And this is kind of a new initiative included in the budget, in the governor's budget. It's calculated at $500,000 per year. As you go through, there are the appropriations under Section 4 for the department. As always, in the past, there are certain riders that go through the department that aren't necessarily within the department. You'll see those on lines 81.4 through 81.10, including the Minnesota Children's Museum, the Academy of Science, the Duluth Children's Museum, the Board of Teaching, and the Board of School Administrators. Those are continuing the same amount of funds. However, there is some new language also in as a rider, and this includes the in paragraph G on line 81. This is in reference to the special ed paperwork reduction that we've been working on through the department, and we have already worked with the special education community on reducing paperwork. The total special education system report was a few hundred pages. It's something that our Division of Compliance and Monitoring worked with the community to reduce that to about 15 pages to try to provide some assistance to that community and provide some less paperwork. What this will do is take it a step further and provide and provide electronic model IDEA paperwork for school districts to use as an option. Some school districts may not actually have the full requirement of special ed staff to put together this paperwork. Oftentimes what districts might do is they may go through a vendor to help provide this paperwork. What this will do is it will align all the federal requirements for special education that are required under an IEP and not go beyond that. So districts will be able to use this free of charge to fill out their paperwork. If they choose to go through another route, they're more than welcome to do that. But this guarantees that districts will not be going beyond what the federal requirements are. The only other change that's not through us is under, I believe you all had heard from the Purpose Center before, but in under Section 6, there's an upgrade to their technology as they're moving from Apple's to a Windows network. But with that, that's the bill.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry and Dr. Melcher. We'll open it up for questions. And just a reminder that we will go with questions until 9 o'clock, and then we have a number of testifiers. So the first on the list is Representative McDonald.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, Commissioner Sebelius said that she's looking for ideas and help from the legislature to help fund schools. And I just want to mention something that seems as though I was in a clandestine manner chastised for mentioning the fact that school trust lands that were set aside to help fund schools were not in the purview of this committee. Now, I admit I'm new to this committee, but it would seem to me that any school trust lands that were set aside back in 1858 of every township in the state of Minnesota to help fund and pay for education is under the purview of this committee. And if it's not, I must be crazy. And that could be arguable. So with that said, since the commissioner is looking for ideas and help to fund education, I can't imagine why the governor isn't addressing some of the main factors of how to fund this, and that is with the school trust lands up in Ely and Babbitts that could yield billions of dollars for our education. Now, as I said, in 1858, every county, township, was supposed to set aside lands, 16 and 36. And in many of the metro areas and some of the rural areas, that land was sold to help fund public education, including my county, Ray County.
Representative McDonald, I'd hate to interrupt you, but could you get to your question? I have quite a lengthy list here.
Thank you. I'm glad you hated to interrupt me. So with that, because I know you're a kind young lady. So with that said, let's have that discussion. If it's not right now, Representative Van Zyls, let's have that. Let's not ignore the fact that it's we have should not be talking about it, that that precious land up there and the precious resources that God put there are to fund every school district. So the question is, will we have that discussion? Will we consider that? Not just the money set aside that with the investment and the premiums that pay off, but the land and the precious metals there today. Will we consider that to help fund education going forward?
Dr. Melcher, Mr. McKinney.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, there's under the purview of the Department of Education, we don't necessarily have the expertise in land management. In the past, we have a counterpart, or a colleague of mine, Darren Cordy, sat on the kind of the oversight committee for the trust land, so we did have some voice in how those lands were managed. That was changed last session. But I think we are open to any ideas to look at funding for schools, but I do want to caution you all that when we are looking towards making adjustments to increase funding for education, that although it's very important and we definitely appreciate the set aside and the funds that do run to schools, that's not necessarily the largest amount, and if we make some changes, we're sure to see, we can see some gains. But for the changes that we're looking at, for the increases that you want to see across the state, if you're going to drive a significant increase in the formula, we're going to need to see something a little bit more substantial when you start talking percentages on the formula.
Thank you. And just a reminder, now we have seven representatives who'd like to speak, and we have 15 minutes. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will try to be as quick as possible. Dr. Melcher, in Section 9 under the Special Education, Article 3, will there be a new accounting system for the maintenance of effort that allegedly will be paid through the excess cost aid?
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson,
Dr. Melcher.
The maintenance of effort is governed by the federal IDEA,
yes.
Federal special education statutes. And the state is obligated each year to document that at the state level we are maintaining our effort for special education. In other words, the state aid is at least staying constant from year to year. And also that school districts individually are maintaining their effort from state and local funds. So there is nothing in this bill that would change that. In fact, it would require a change in federal law to have a change there. But in Section 9, what we are doing is to change the mechanism. Currently, we have a mechanism that if it appears based on the forecast that we're not going to maintain effort, we make an adjustment to the capped appropriation for special education. And what this would do would be, because there wouldn't be a cap to manipulate here, we would instead be adjusting the reimbursement percentage for excess cost aid. But the end result would be the same, that if we had a prediction of the state aid for special education going down, that would jeopardize our federal aid for special education. This would be a new mechanism that would ensure that the state aid stayed at least flat so that we would not be losing our federal aid.
So, Madam Chair, follow-up.
Okay. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Melcher, do the districts, however, have to report to you this maintenance of effort on their part through a new UFARS coding or something, UFARS meaning the uniform way that districts report to you?
Madam Chair, Dr.
Melcher.
Representative Erickson, the school districts do have to report to us annually on their maintenance of effort, and we get that with a combination of data that the school districts report through a system that we call EDRS, which is identifying individual special education teachers that they're seeking reimbursement for. And then that's supplemented with UFARS data that gives us information on things like fringe benefits and other costs, and we do not have any change in that. We've been using the same system for many years, and we would continue to use that same system.
Thank you, Dr. Melcher. Madam Chair, one more question.
Representative Erickson.
Dr. Melcher, on health and safety levy, this is Article 4, Section 2. Mm-hmm. Would you re-explain what's going to happen in regard to, because this will be a property tax increase, if districts levy beyond what they can levy now, but I'm unclear about the 3165. So will you re-explain that, please?
Yes,
Dr. Melcher
and Representative Erickson. There's no change in the state policy as to what school districts can levy for under health and safety. So there's no net property tax increase related to health and safety. This change this is a change in the equalizing factor, where we look at what the school district's tax base is per student to calculate equalization aid. The increase in the equalization factor here is to offset the reduction in the number of pupil units because of the pupil unit weighting changes that are in Article 1. So it's just a revenue neutral adjustment to try to keep the same amount of state aid flowing out that we currently have. And in health and safety, we have a very low equalization factor, so there are only a few districts that qualify for any state aid.
Thank you, Dr. Melcher. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a few different points, but one, just touching back on this recent conversation, so there are many places in here where it looks as if there's an increase in a dollar amount, but it's actually revenue neutral because you're adjusting the weighting, so there aren't these huge changes in actuality. It's just accounting and bookkeeping. Is that a reasonable approximation?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, the governor is recommending a simplified pupil accounting system. And there would be fewer weighted pupil units counted as a result of that. And so there are several places where the allowance per pupil is increased proportionately to offset that, so that we end up with a revenue neutral situation. But at the end of the day, with the simpler pupil accounting structure, it will be a little bit easier to explain how the funding works to the public.
Oh, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that clarification. I hope in the vein of transparency, it's clear that we let the public know that these aren't actually increases, that's just an accounting thing. I, at some time, would be nice, it's always nice to have the commissioner present. It'd be very nice to be able to have a conversation which would include representatives being able to get clarifications on points. So I would hope in the future, when the commissioner comes, we would have an opportunity to have that conversation and improve that clarity. I did appreciate the discussions about graduate on time. I was sorry to hear that there's a slipping in the grad rate for students of color. I was really appreciative of the achievement gap discussion and the fix on integration to try and improve achievement gap, and then the focus and actually improving things for the students that are there. That in the presentation, I would like some clarification in the accounting section, Article 6, on pages 71 and 72, 71.16 through 71.20. There are three districts pointed out there, and then on the following page, 72.19 through 72.22, again, these same three districts, which I'd like to understand why they're there, since you've got the two largest cities and then a city that's, what, about the sixth or seventh largest denoted there. Why are they specially put out? And then, especially when you've got the entire amount of the levy certification prior years, it appears as if they're having some special treatment. Could you enlighten us on that?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, the stricken language that you see, for example, on line 7117 and 7118 is referring to those same districts. So districts receiving revenue under 124D86 subdivision 3 clauses 1, 2, and 3. That is Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. And what the longstanding practice has been is that those three districts are required to recognize their integration levy a year early, and it's forward shifted to the prior year. And so this, in the proposed integration formula, we do not any longer have a separate allowance specifically for Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. Right now, they have a separate allowance that applies specifically to them. But in the proposed new integration formula, we just have one allowance that applies uniformly to everyone. So there's no longer a separate clause specifically for Minneapolis, St. Paul. So this is really a technical change, maintaining the requirement that those three districts recognize their integration levy early.
Madam Chair, I understand the original was drawn up for cities of the first class was the original language. When Rochester became a city of the first class, now it's being clarified, maintaining three districts, and you brought up integration. Duluth is below the state average for proportionality of students of color. Rochester is above the state average by quite a bit of students of color. And I just don't understand why we're continuing to maintain a district that doesn't maybe fit in the criteria back when it was, you know, the third largest city, maybe was more diverse, but it's no longer. But we're, you know, I think we need to get rid of some of these arcane carryovers from past decades, and that's part of the problem with the school, you know, formula and some of the funding process, is that we keep doing things because, well, we've done this in the past, but when they stop making sense, we need to stop carrying over things that don't make sense and aren't connected to facts and the reality of today.
Representative Kwan, again, I hate to interrupt you. I'm wondering if you do you have a question?
I would like to understand the justification for continuing practices that started decades ago and not correcting them in this language. As you say, you're striking old language and adding new. Why aren't you correcting things that no longer would be valid for the original
Dr.
purpose?
Madam Chair and Representative Kwan, it would be possible to undo this. One thing I want to say first is that this does not provide any extra money to these three school districts. What it does is it requires them to recognize part of their property tax levy early, because we recognize part of the property tax levy early the year before. So we've been shifting this levy for many years. Now, there are two ways you could get rid of this. You could say, for 1 year, these districts aren't going to get their integration funding, or you could say, for 1 year, they will have to make a double levy to kind of undo the shift. But if you did that, then there would be a property tax increase. So what the governor's budget has done is kind of maintain the status quo in terms of continuing this shift that we've had on the books for several years. But there are other options, but they would involve either property tax increases or one-time state appropriation to cover the hole, and the governor did not support either a property tax increase or an additional appropriation at this time.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for Mr. McHenry. You talked about the eligibility for early childhood scholarships, but an issue that was raised a number of times in our earlier hearings around early childhood programming was the use of the scholarships and the difficulty in school-based programs in accepting students who are funded by those scholarships, and I don't see anything in this language to address that. So I'm wondering what the department's point of view is on that.
Madam Chair, Representative
Mr. McHenry.
Breinert, the way the language was drafted, it was drafted for families to choose where they use their early education scholarships. And although there may be problems in schools of how they use the scholarships in schools, the language doesn't prohibit families from using these in schools. If there are mechanisms to discuss to maybe open avenues to try to figure out ways to make it more equitable for schools, we're open to having that discussion. But I think this language right now, it doesn't prohibit scholarships from being used in schools.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I understand that, Mr. McHenry. My point is just that we were, the department did say this issue would be addressed, and so I'm just wanting to raise it further and have it on the table. Thank you.
Representative Wills, last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I had a couple questions. I'll try to be brief. It was Article 11, Section 3 about the School Climate Center. I guess I'm just not clear on a couple of details, such as the policies. A question I had where it says on line 80.15 on page 80, develop and disseminate a model bullying and intimidation prevention policy document for schools. Does that mean that every school would have to use the same policy, or would a school be able to come up with their own model or use a current model that they have? And then I had a couple follow-up questions.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative, right now under statute, school districts are allowed to use their own policy. I think there has been some concern as to some of the bullying incidents in schools, that maybe that hasn't been strong enough. What this is, what this language does, we have had a bullying prevention task force that provided recommendations. This is based off of the recommendations of the bullying prevention task force, and I think the purpose of this is that is to look at best practices and model policies to help develop model policies, and can give those out to school districts. This doesn't say specifically that districts have to use a specific policy that comes out of this climate center, but this is basically saying that this school climate center could help gather these best practices and disseminate what some of these model bullying policies, or I apologize, bullying prevention policies might be.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, and that's helpful. And then just on a follow-up on that, with the collection and sharing of data, I was just curious, you know, further down it talks about collaborating and disseminating information, also further up. And I'm just wondering, who would have access, and how would that data be protected? What kind of data is being collected? I guess it's just concerning to me when you're collecting data, if it's about the children themselves, how that might be used. And I'm sure other parents might have concerns about that.
Mr. McHenry.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative, the purpose of, I think first off, the toolkit in the, that's included in this climate center is something that needs to be developed with experts. I think the issue as far as data privacy and how data goes out and who's involved, I think that's something that would be discussed under this school climate center and the school, the interagency climate council or other advocates that want to be involved to ensure that we are you know, not disseminating information that should not be disseminated. But I think the idea is behind this whole provision in, or the whole three sections here, is that we want to make sure that we are providing a, or helping districts to provide safe learning environments for all students throughout the state. Obviously, each district has its own challenges that it needs to address. But from the Department of Education perspective, is that we want to be able to be a resource for districts, not on just bullying prevention, but on any avenue that we can to be more supportive of helping districts accomplish their goals. And we feel that this is something that can help provide some information to districts to help them make some decisions on how they can provide the best and safest learning environment for all students.
Representative Wills, last question.
Thank you. Yeah, just wanted to ask, because of the data privacy issues, will this bill be going to civil law? Do we know?
Mr. McHenry, do we know the trajectory of this bill?
Madam Chair, Representatives, I'm not certain the path that the bill takes. Our role is pulling this bill together and putting the pieces together to get it in front of you all. And that's up for the legislature to decide, and the House to decide, and the chairs to decide what direction this may go.
Chair Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. There are portions of this bill, like setting up the new climate center, that would be a new agency and so forth, that would have to go before the Government Operations Committee. And so our intent on that is to maybe create a separate bill, rather than taking this whole bill to another committee, pulling out certain parts and having individual bills, and then taking them through those committees. So that would probably be the same thing we do, Representative Wills, on data practices.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And I know that other representatives had questions, and I'm wondering, Dr. Melcher and Mr. McHenry, usually you're very gracious about making yourself available if representatives could approach you with their questions. Thank you very much for being here today. We now have, members, we now have 15 testifiers. So each testifier will get about 3 minutes each. We will start with Scott Kuhnquist from AMSD, and then after Scott, Sue Abderholden from NAMI will speak with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I will try to be very brief. I know you have a tight agenda. First off, we would like to acknowledge the fact that the governor is making a significant investment in education, and this is important in light of the $1 billion state shortfall. So we very much appreciate that. The key points that we are particularly supportive of are continuing integration revenue, although I will remind you that under current law, the levy does not continue. That really will end up resulting in a 30% cut in that program. So we are really urging you to consider reinstating the levy as well as the state aid and moving ahead with a reformed integration revenue program. We are also very supportive of the effort to expand full-day kindergarten. Here again, though, we do have a but, and the but is that under the proposal, districts would be required, if they're going to use that new revenue, to offer the full-day K site-wide. And that is problematic for a district that is currently offering full-day K on a sliding fee scale. The numbers just really wouldn't work for them under that scenario, and so they would likely not expand full-day K then, because there wouldn't be enough money to make up for the loss of tuition that they would get from this, if that makes sense to you. So obviously we would like to see you go all the way on full-day K and fully fund it, and then that would make it widely available. Probably the provision that we are the most enthusiastic about are the special education changes. There's a significant increase, and then as you just heard, though, from Dr. Melcher, the huge change would be making this a forecast program. We would move away from having that be a capped appropriation and having it prorated. And that is the large reason why we've seen the special ed cross-subsidy grow in recent years. And so that's a huge change, and we are very supportive of it. Also want to just mention the ELL. We are supportive of that as well, expanding that from 5 to 7 years. I think the research is clear that supports that. And then finally, we don't think that you can do all these things if you want to pay back the shift early. And so we support the governor's position that we don't need to accelerate the shift to this biennium unless somehow you end up where the next forecast is far better than we're expecting, or you end up with a lot bigger target than we're expecting. We just don't think you're going to have the resources available to both accelerate payment of the shift and make the necessary new investments. Just a couple of concerns I do want to mention. Many of the changes in the governor's proposal take effect in the second year of the biennium. So you just need to know, under the level of funding proposed, that first year is looking tight. Most districts would continue to make reductions in the first year of the biennium under this level of funding. I know the Anoka-Hennepin superintendent's been on record saying for that district they would be looking at $12 million shortfall, which could mean up to 200 staff layoffs. So again, we understand the situation that you're in with the state budget, but we don't want you to be under the impression that everything would be rosy under this level of funding for school districts. There would be cuts in the first year. And then just one other thing, I've heard some feedback from some of our members who are concerned about rolling extended time into compensatory and whether or not they're going to be able to continue their after-school and summer school programs. We certainly understand the intent is to provide more flexibility to school districts, and that is welcome, but summer school and extended time programs are also very important, and so we want to make sure we don't harm those programs. So I'll stop there, Madam Chair and members, because I know you got a long list. But thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spoonquist. Sue Abderholden from NAMI is here next, and then Tina Armstrong will be coming down.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members Welcome. Of the committee. I'm Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are, of course, concerned about what happens in education because children with mental illnesses typically have poor outcomes, higher suspension rates, higher dropout rates, and, of course, 70% of the kids in the juvenile justice system have one or more mental health diagnoses. Just briefly, on the Safe Schools levy, we actually wanted to see that increased. You know, there's been a lot of attention this session on children's mental health, and we've talked a lot about schooling to mental health, but we also need the support personnel in the school, such as school social workers, school psychologists, school nurses, and, you know, we have this continuum, and we definitely need some more help there. On the regional centers of excellence, probably about a week and a half ago, you'd have received a report from the Department of Education on the use of seclusion restraints in the schools. One of the recommendations there was that we actually create some regional centers of excellence so that when schools are trying to figure out what to do with a child, they may be using the restraints or seclusion excessively and they want help, that they have access to it. So we would like that to be a part of those regional centers of excellence. On the School Climate Council, we also believe that there should be some mention of positive behavior intervention and supports there. This is a process for creating safe and effective schools. It's research-based. We're currently in about 16% of Minnesota schools. We've impacted 213,000 children. It is a highly successful program and actually helps reduce bullying as well, and so we'd like to see a mention there. Lastly, in terms of the special education aid, we are grateful that there is more money for special education. The loss of funds there has really created problems, especially for children who need care and treatment, who are maybe in a residential treatment center, go to a day treatment program. We've had schools kind of somewhat fighting with parents saying, no, you can't go to that program because the transportation will cost more. But, of course, that may be the best therapeutic program for the child. So we've really created a lot of problems because we haven't fully funded special education. So we're really glad to see that. A little nervous, frankly, about the new funding formula. I've been around, as many of you know, way too long. And one of the reasons we developed it the way that we did was particularly for rural areas. So, you know, if you only have four children who have an emotional behavioral disorder, you need to have that teacher, whether you have four kids or whether you have eight kids. And so that's kind of how that model first developed. We do really trust Mr. Melcher, and we're really hoping that this is going to work. But I'm just going to say we're just a little bit nervous and would hope that we would at least really watch this as it unfolds. And I appreciate the time to talk to you this morning.
Thank you very much, Ms. Aberholden. And now we have Tina Armstrong from the Minnesota Council for the Gifted and Talented, which will be followed by Chris Richardson from MASA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tina Armstrong from the Minnesota Council for Gifted and Talented. I'm the current president of MCGT. We are a statewide nonprofit support and advocacy organization for Minnesota's GT kids. I kind of talk about myself as I get the job of being the head mama bear for the GT kids in Minnesota. We are primarily an organization of parents, although we do have educators and other professionals as part of our membership. Our mission is to promote better understanding of and educational services for gifted and talented kids. We've been around for 56 years now. We've got 600 members, and thousands more are reached through our network of chapters. We've got 28 chapters around the state: Minnetonka, Richfield, St. Paul, Burnsville. We just had one open up in Mankato, Rochester. So we're statewide. We also have some centered on special populations, including our twice exceptional, so our GT kids that also have learning disabilities, as well as homeschoolers. We have a large number of homeschoolers in our group. The reason I'm here to talk to you today, and you've got a handout, is because of the GT funding. Within HF 630, there is a repealer of the gifted and talented revenue. Our concerns come from the fact that right now our GT program statute, 120B15, it's all about may. Districts may identify kids, GT kids. They may develop local programs. They may provide staff development for GT. You know, what we have gotten as far as GT and the way we've gotten to where we are in this state is because we also have a GT funding, dedicated funding that can only be spent on these services. Since that funding went into place in 2005, we've grown to having almost 6% of our kids identified as gifted and talented, almost 50,000 kids. We've gone from having 5 full-time gifted programs in the state to 17. And my concern is, I am all for more flexible funding and all of those types of things, if this money isn't dedicated, absent having some sort of a mandate for GT in this state, out of necessity, districts are going to put the money where there is a mandate and just towards operational expenses. That is our concern. Even with the GT funding, we've still got a long way to go, significant challenges in gifted and talented. As far as identification of gifted and talented students from underserved populations, Giftedness manifests itself differently among cultural groups, and these differences are not always recognized within our schools. We talk about the achievement gap. Well, there's an achievement gap in gifted and talented, too, and not all students have access to the resources they need to excel in schools. We need to build an infrastructure to ensure teachers and administrators are trained in gifted and talented. St. Cloud did a study recently, and they had one teacher who had 1 hour of GT in their pre-service. So really what we're looking for is, you know, we have heard from the district, and we're hopeful that they're going to look at some policy provisions to strengthen GT, but absence of strengthening of the GT policy statute, we have concerns that with the cuts in funding. If we can get something that pairs up well, that strengthens the policy at the same time we get more flexible funding, that's what we can support.
Thank you, Ms. Armstrong. And next we have Chris Richardson from the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.
Madam Chair, to that last presentation, could Dr. Melcher clarify? So it's a role of gifted and talented, but the statute stays in place. So I'm confused. So there still will be gifted and talented.
Could you just speak with him after the meeting?
I think he needs to clarify this for all of us, because the money's gone, but the program's in place. So I'm confused.
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, in the governor's budget recommendation, the separate set aside for gifted and talented, the $12 per pupil, would be repealed. The policy is still in place, but school districts would not be required to have a set aside in their budgets specifically for gifted.
Thank you, Dr. Melcher.
I still consider this a mandate, so just clarify.
The statute
Ms. Armstrong, thank you so much, but we do need to continue on. We need Chris Richardson now, and if Chris is not here, could we have Grace Kelleher from the Minnesota School Board Association? And then after Grace, we'll have Brad Lundell for Schools for Equity in Education. Welcome, Ms. Kelleher.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. Pleasure to see you sitting in that chair as a former board member up there. I'm going to just roughly go through our concerns, and I'm going to start off with what we liked. We always should start off on a positive note. We're very happy about the changes to special education. It seems clear in this bill that 70% of special education costs will be given to the districts and covered by state aid funds, with a 30% component having to be paid for by the local district. But the present system, as a percentage of salaries and then of supplies, and then it's capped, so you get a prorated number from that, a little wacky. So this would be much easier to budget for and to know what we could count on from the state. We are very happy the ELL program has taken from 5 to 7 years. We're seeing students globally from across Minnesota come here and come from very different situations, some which have never sat down in a classroom or even seen a printed word, and their needs are larger than others. We're happy with the elimination of the pension subtraction that was done in 1997, another crazy formula that's hung on too long, and that money is given to districts and then taken away. This would allow us to retain it and move on from that. And last but not least, we're really happy with the compensatory revenue flexibility that's being raised from 5 to 15%, and we think that's great. In the right direction, but maybe not enough, teacher evaluation dollars of $22 per pupil. We're pretty sure that's not even close to what we need, and we've been working with House Research along with Education Minnesota to establish a defendable number on what that could be going forward. But I think we feel pretty strongly that we know it's going to be more than $22 per pupil unit. We appreciate voluntary all day, every day K, but funded at 0.7% means that 30% of that program, if you want to supply it, would have to come out of your general education budget. And we really encourage folks, we feel strongly that early education is important, but certainly let's finish with kindergarten before we move down to early education. And partially funding it and moving on to early education really isn't fair to all the kids that need an all-day, every-day kindergarten program. things we're concerned about. We are very concerned about the 1% increase in the general education formula. 1% is simply not enough. It's $52 per pupil, and this is the fund that we use to fund all the other deficits I've talked about. And we would really appreciate a much higher percent increase. I know from the summer working group, my members' hopes were pinned really high that we'd see a big increase, a new direction in education funding, and 1% doesn't get us there, we feel. The change in weighting, sort of it's a bean counters budget where we're going to change the way we count things. And our concern is more psychological for our communities. For example, our present system funds general education aid at $5,224 per pupil. By the new way of counting, that would go up to $5,700. To most people in the community, that sounds like a $500 per pupil increase.
That's right.
What could we be worried about? We're also concerned about the Safe Schools revenue roll-in. We really think after Newtown to have that discussion would be important at the local level, and extended time being rolled into the compensatory revenue formula. And with that, members, I believe you, but I want to also alert you to the federal sequestration program going on. The cuts to Minnesota schools from the federal government look to be about 5.8%. So as you look at that, realize we might be facing a deficit because of federal action of that much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kelleher. And now we'll have Brad Lundell from Schools with Equity in Education. And then Mr. Richardson is with us now. So after Mr. Lundell, we'll hear from Mr. Richardson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity in Education. 3 minutes. I usually don't get warmed up until five, so this is going to be a pretty dull testimony here. I just would like to say thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thanks for the governor for coming forward. I think it's important to note, as Mr. Kroonquist said, that these are tight economic times, and the governor did come forward, put money in education. I think that the money for special ed is very important. We're a little concerned there about some of the formula changes that are suggested. I think making it a forecast program is important, but there are some formula changes going from the cost reimbursement formula to the census and weightings and other aspects of that formula. I think there are some distributional issues there. We like kind of the nods to certain issues. I think, again, resource levels make it difficult to, do everything that needs to be done. I think the all-day K, as Mr. Kroonquist said, puts some districts in a tough situation as to whether or not they'll be able to provide it, or you keep doing the fees, or do you take the increased weighting. The teacher valuation, again, another nod to that, $20 or thereabouts. I think that's, again, something that districts are going to be doing. It's a mandate. This is not going to fully fund that mandate. We would like to see more in that direction. But, again, at least there's a placeholder there to do some things that need to be done for all districts. I think some of the things, the Centers of Excellence, I think is a good way to look at this. And maybe there are some ways that they use the Centers of Excellence to help with teacher evaluation, help with some of the department initiatives that are coming forward. The ELL change is good. The extension of the integration revenue is good. I think the one thing about integration revenue I want to say is that we have we don't have a lot of districts in C that are participating, but we do have some. The changes here I always use Buffalo as an example, and a lot of people say, well, Buffalo gets integration revenue. Why does Buffalo get integration revenue? Well, they border Osseo. The program that's been created there has brought minority children in from the Osseo district into Buffalo. Some folks say, well, gee, Buffalo doesn't need money to do that, but it's created the integration revenue has created a new opportunity there. Buffalo is a low revenue district, doesn't have a huge referendum. That integration revenue has helped create a program. I think it's important to note that as we move forward, that the integration revenue, sometimes you can talk about the purposes and all the rest of that, but it has created opportunities in some districts that are necessary. But before leaving, I do want to say we're a little disappointed with some of the absence of some things that in the proposal. The governor's working group worked hard the last 2 years, especially over the last summer. They came up with a very comprehensive proposal It included bringing back a number of things, also more money on the formula, recognizing money that was lost to inflation, return of the general education levy, more equalization for referenda. With those things gone from this proposal, and we understand that, you know, Representative Dabney and Representative Lincheski over in the Tax Committee will be talking about a lot of tax policy, and I know that Representative Marquardt in our meeting with our group has also talked about that, but it's very, very important, I think. We live in that universe, C lives in that universe where the property tax system and the education system meet, and we want to make sure that that is looked at this year. We're optimistic that it will be looked at. We hope that resources are there to take care of some inequities that have been growing over the last 20 years.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lundell. Mr. Richardson. And after Mr. Richardson, we will hear from Connie Hayes, representing the intermediates. Mr. Richardson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Chris Richardson. I'm superintendent of Northfield Public Schools. I'm completing my 32nd year as a school superintendent. I've worked in districts of 250 kids K-12 and districts of 22,000 kids K-12. I really appreciate the opportunity for us to come and myself as a representative of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators this morning and to be able to give us an opportunity to provide some perspective on the governor's education budget and on this bill. I think as a school administrator, I would be remiss if I didn't indicate to you that we continue to be concerned about the fact that the constitutional duty of the legislature to provide the general, uniform, thorough, and efficient system of public schools is continuing to struggle. We have a funding system that really has become increasingly inadequate. And because of that, we, I think, are seeing more and more driving dollars or driving an effort to try to create additional resources by going to voter-approved referenda as the alternative to the necessary funding that we need for regular ed and special education programs. We want to thank the governor for his support of K-12 education and recognize him for presenting two consecutive budgets that significantly increase funding for K-12. But despite those efforts, I think there are several things that are going on that we'd like to address and ask for the consideration in terms of possible revisions. First, I think we need to look at the increase in the general fund revenue basic formula amount to a level that truly recognizes the costs of educating students in Minnesota. We know right now at current level we're at $52.24. That's over $2,000 less than what we have in terms of actual buying power going back to 1991-92. So you'd have to have more than $2,000 more in the levy right now if we were just to get the same buying power we had 20 years ago. The basic formula component is the key for school districts. It's basically the driver in terms of the operation of our schools, and it is a piece that is very important. The 1% increase doesn't even address the inflationary increases that we'll be seeing this year, nor does it have any impact on reducing long-term funding deficit. So I think as a result, we're going to continue to see school districts trying to use levy strategies to try to address that. Second, I think we need to have the legislature look at how do we provide the funding it will take to really provide all-day kindergarten programming and also provide increased flexibility. The issue here is that although a 70% amount is a much better situation than 0.55, it is still not the cost of a full-time kindergarten teacher. And so the ability of every district to be able to address and provide full-time kindergarten is going to be difficult at that level.
Mr. Richardson, yes. Your presentation is wonderful. I'm wondering, though, we have a number.
Speed it up. Okay.
I really need to move on. Third piece is wonderful. I'm wondering, though, we have a number.
Speed it up. Okay.
I really need to move
third
on.
Piece,
thank
then,
you.
Then we would just frame as definitely the evaluation piece is important, but $22 a student is not going to be enough money to make that happen. We've looked at that from all angles, and it just takes more in terms of staff and time. Fourth, the special ed formula is an extremely important piece for you to work on. We really appreciate the 13% increase, but again, we're about $600 million behind in special ed, and so if we're going to address that, we have to take those direct efforts. And finally, equity is a key component because when we have districts that are funded at different levels because of their ability to pass operating levies, we have disparate educational opportunities for kids across the state.
Thank you so much. Mr. Richardson. And now we'll have Ms. Hayes from the intermediate districts, followed by Jan Ormasa.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Connie Hayes, superintendent at Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District. There are two provisions in the bill which I would like to provide testimony on behalf of the three intermediate school districts. Together, the intermediate districts 287, 916, and 917 serve students from 31 member school districts and many other non-member districts in the metropolitan area. We employ nearly 1,800 staff serving students at over 60 sites. Our core work with our members fall in the areas of special education, vocational education, and area learning centers. The first provision I'd like to speak about today is the teacher evaluation and development revenue. Although the intermediate school districts would be required to meet the provisions in the bill regarding teacher evaluation, the revenue supports being considered for the K-12 districts and charter schools are not available to the intermediates. In the past, we have talked about how the intermediates do not have the capacity to generate sufficient QCOMP dollars. The reason for this is most of the ADMs that we serve are actually counted in their home districts. And also, the bill does not offer aid for the intermediates to meet the provisions. We are in conversation with MDE about our concerns, but we wanted you to be aware that currently the language does not support the intermediate school districts with the teacher evaluation and development revenue. The second provision I'd like to speak about is in regard to the proposed roll-in of the extended time into the formula. There are three issues for us to understand. First, within the current extended time revenue, it's important to distinguish between the larger portion of extended time that currently goes towards targeted services, which you've heard testimony on from today, and the smaller portion, which we're concerned about, which goes towards credit recovery for high school students who are far behind in credits and at risk of not graduating. Secondly, the ALC programs run by the intermediate school districts use this extended time dollars to fund our credit recovery evening and summer classes. These students are typically fully enrolled in their high school program, but they are on track not to graduate because they are so far behind in credits. For our intermediate ALCs, this is roughly one-third of our revenue. So the roll-in of all the extended time into the formula affects the intermediate district significantly and different than regular high schools. And lastly, if these credit recovery services are no longer supported, we believe graduation rates will drop.
Thank you
for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes. And now we have Jan Ormasa, followed by Dan Pyron. Welcome, Ms. Ormasa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Madam Chair, good morning, members of the committee. My name is Jan Ormasa, and I am the Executive Director for the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the MACE members. As you know, the investment in education for students with disabilities is an economic investment in that skill development and acquisition for them to be contributing members of our society. In the governor's education package, there's a significant investment for the special education, as you've heard from Dr. Melcher, for $125 million. MACE wholeheartedly thanks the governor for recognizing the importance of the educational investment for our students with disabilities. We are in strong support of the $125 million investment, but we are really trying to understand the implications of the new formula. As you have heard from Dr. Melster, this is a significant change from the salaries to a cost per disability area. And so it is imperative, as you know, to address the issues of the cross-subsidy to the local school districts. MACE understands that in 2002, the cross-subsidy was at 8.8% of the Education Aid Foundation, and now in 2013, they are forecasting it to be 12.6% of the Education Foundation Aid. So, as you know, it's critical to address this fundamental underlying issue. We cannot have general education competing with special education as a moral, ethical dilemma. The other part that's really concerning to us is, you know, it's a partnership. So the looming sequester that is coming next Friday, March 1st, for us is significant at $600 million across the nation. And what does it mean for Minnesota? We think it means about $10 million for Minnesota. That partnership is also the piece with, as we look at the trend in what's happening with the complexity with special education, a student with autism doesn't just need a special education teacher. They need related service providers, speech pathologists to help them with language processing, social workers with skill development. They need OTs for sensory integration, and so it's not just one piece. So we are willing to work with the governor, but we're very concerned about what happened to the $70 million difference between the working group component. So just one other area I want to address, two pieces, the Center for Excellence that I want to support, the Centers for Excellence and the training that would happen with RTI and PBIS, and also with looking at the restrictive procedures. And the final piece is the $1.8 million. We, MACE, is in strong disagreement with the $1.8 million. It is not about an online system, and it is not about the MDE forms. It's really about the content of the forms and the rules and the interpretation of what is happening with the 100% compliance. So we thank you very much for this opportunity to testify before you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Armasa. Mr. Pyron, and followed by Mr. Bartholomew, and we just are trying to get everyone in here, so about 2 minutes apiece, which I know is not much. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I'll be as brief as I can, as a bean counter can. My name is Dan Pyron. I'm the Director of Fiscal Affairs for Winona Area Public Schools. I'm here representing MASBO, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and we're a group of over 600 school business managers that, with expertise in school finance and other operations. I won't go into a long dissertation on our platform. We basically promote efficiency, and of course, you know, we are always looking at the funding aspect of it. As far as the governor's proposal, we applaud the efforts to make the school funding operations more efficient, especially. It will be a little confusing, but with the pupil weightings, it will work out better, and especially with the special education changing in reimbursement. And also, we are really excited about, you know, the increase in the special ed funding. The cross subsidy is a big issue. For example, in our district, Winona, about 25% of our students have an IEP. And we probably subsidize from the general fund about $4 million per year for special education programming. While the increase in state aid is a start, we would like to see the state aid formula rise to the level of inflation over the last 10 years and also keep in line with it in the future. And we support the work of the Commissioner's Working Group on School Funding. School finance, we support all the recommendations. Unfortunately, a lot of them weren't in this proposal, but we hope that the legislators use it as a framework to guide discussion on ways to enhance and improve school finance legislation. Thank you for your time. I just want to point out that we're here to help. If you have questions on the financial impact and some of these things on your district, go to your school business manager and ask them, because we're all about information. And it's nice to see that somebody referenced this budget as the bean counters budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pyron. And so far you get the award for the most concise presentation. Mr. Bartholomew is next from the Minnesota Business Partnership, followed by Mr. Pritchard from the Minnesota Family Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And I'll be quick. I'd like to just briefly highlight three things in the governor's proposed budget that we'd encourage you to support, and three things that we'd like to work with you on to change. The three things for supporting: first is the governor's recommendation for the parent aware rating system for early ed providers and related scholarships for low-income families. While we'd like to encourage some relatively minor changes to expand family access to more providers, we think the governor's budget makes a great start. Second is the governor's proposal to help districts implement the new teacher evaluation requirements. And third, it's always good to simplify education funding formulas and make them more transparent for the public. And the governor's recommendations for the new pupil unit counts and the equity formula are two good examples. Three things we'd like to work with you to change. First, we'd ask that you don't repeal the Early Graduation Achievement Scholarship Program. This was passed with the goal of helping high school students who are ready to graduate early to move on to higher education. And combined with the proposed elimination of districts being able to use learning year funds to offer accelerated learning opportunities and the roll-in of the gifted and talented revenue, seems frankly to send the wrong message that we're backing off our support for students who may be able to move through our system more quickly. Second, we'd ask that you keep the current focus on third grade literacy. The governor's budget would drop recognition for districts that are able to help third grade students read at a third grade level. Growth is good, but without a specific target like third grade literacy, too many students will continue to lag behind. And third, we'd like to work with you to create more incentives for schools that are able to help students succeed. A couple examples might be English language learners and certain special ed students. Shouldn't we provide some incentives for districts that are able to transition these students out of supplemental programs sooner? We'd like to thank Representative Marquardt for the vision he set Tuesday night, and we look forward to working with you on this bill and others to not only close our deep and persistent achievement gaps, but also raise overall student achievement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Mr. Pritchard, welcome.
Yes, Madam Chair, my name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and I just had three quick points to make. One is regarding the School Climate Council. Our concern here is clearly we all want to oppose bullying, but we're concerned if this moves into kind of a social reeducation focus in the schools, and we would oppose that, but obviously we do want to eliminate bullying in all forms against all students. Secondly, on the all-day kindergarten, we would just raise questions and concerns about whether the efficacy of all-day kindergarten programs. A number of studies suggest that any academic benefits fade out after a short period of time, and there's evidence that there are even detrimental impacts of driving children into organized institutional learning settings before they're really ready. And so we would raise questions about, is that the wise use of state taxpayer money? And then finally, a couple comments on the scholarship program for preschool programs. We strongly support choice and giving parents more options, but we feel that the current system, the way it's structured, will actually maybe reduce parents' options, because to achieve a 3 or 4 star rating, a preschool program must adopt and embrace the state standards and curriculum in their program. And I think as a result of that, you're going to create a one-size-fits-all approach. And I think it raises serious questions. If you look at the rating system, will it really mean anything? A MEL study a couple years ago, found that two-thirds of preschool programs automatically receive 4-star ratings. 23 of those were Head Start programs. A federal study shows that Head Start programs, any benefits fade out in a very short period of time. So I think we have to really raise questions as to whether those stars will mean anything. And also the content of those standards really, I think, get into some very ambiguous, even controversial social questions when they talk about gender, cultural identity, social roles, relationship, the environment, other factors, which all preschool programs, if they go to the 3 or 4 star, would be forced to embrace. So we have concerns about that, too. Thank you
very much, Mr. Pritchard. And now we have Jan Alswager from Education Minnesota, followed by Roger Aronson, and we'll finish up with Ron Solberg. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm Jan Alswager, representing Education Minnesota, and I will keep my comments very, very brief. My first point is that I first of all want to applaud the governor for dealing with a budget deficit problem that we've had over the years. And just a reminder that about 10 years ago, the education funding plan was all changed, with that, and the $900 million tax increase that was supposed to go in place did not. And as a result, we've seen budget after budget. And so the governor has put forth a education bill or budget that is without gimmicks or things that we can't figure out. And so it's very straightforward. And that he's also, in other bills, creating a very strong fiscal foundation for our state and for our schools. So that being said, we appreciate that there is money on the formula. There's funding for all day, every day kindergarten, and that there is special ed funding and for teacher development and evaluation. We believe that there should be some more funding in those areas because of some of the comments made by the previous testifiers, so I won't repeat those. You will see us working with other education organizations to try to improve the teacher evaluation funding because we want that to be very successful. I believe I've stated that in the past. The special education funding is very helpful as well. At the end of the day, I hope that we have a budget that is brought forward by the bodies and the governor that can actually put a little more money into education. Otherwise, our districts are going to see some cuts. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now we have Roger Aronson.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary School Principals Associations throughout Minnesota. We have 1,700 school principals and assistant principals. And we're here to testify in support of House File 630. Let me say, it's our position that any budget that isn't a cut is already in the good territory. And we're moving that way with this particular proposal. It's a question of prioritizing. We like the priorities of money on the formula and the special ed money. It's our view that this maximizes local control, local accountability, and the things that we can do for kids with staffing and providing program. That's essential to us. Down the list of the all-day kindergarten, this initiative is strongly supported by both the secondary and the elementary principals. This step in this is very positive, and we applaud that as well. And we're interested in the alternative monies on the QCOMP type revenue that's going towards teacher evaluation. We think that should include principals as well, and we think well, and as we talk about that some more, that's very exciting as well, Madam Chair. I might say the question is how do you prioritize all these things? We like the ordering of the priorities here, and we appreciate the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harrison. And Mr. Solberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ron Solberg. I'm here today representing the Lake Superior Area Schools. I'm handing out a copy of our legislative platform. You don't have to read it. I just wanted you to look at the picture so you can get an idea of where these school districts are located. They're for the most part, the non-range school districts up in northeastern Minnesota around Lake Superior. And I just want to say that we strongly support the governor's bill. We really appreciate the fact that he's putting more funding into education, and the difficulty that he's had to find the revenue in order to put this money in there indicates what a difficult job that is to reverse the recent trend and to start funding education again. So I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Solberg. And members, thank you for your patience. I know we all had many questions. I certainly did, and I'm sure that Chair Marquardt will provide us with an opportunity at some point for discussion. But we just want to let you know we will be laying over this bill for possible inclusion in the education omnibus bill. So with that, this meeting
Madam
is...
Chair, before we adjourn, I just
Representative Woodard.
A quick question for Chair Marquardt, and I appreciate your comments, Madam Chair, that we'll have more opportunity. I mean, lots of good testimony today, and lots of questions that we still have. I mean, this is $14.3 billion plus, the biggest part of our entire state budget, and I'm hoping that we'll have more time to be able to ask lots of questions. Lots of good ideas were raised, lots of concerns were raised, and I hope we have more time than just today, because I think we kind of rushed through today.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Woodard, that I agree wholeheartedly with that. And we're just trying to get through this bill in a few days. We will have plenty of time as we move on. Also, as we take bills, we're going to take them kind of in subject areas, and folks from the MDE are here every day. We can also relate those to the governor's bill, and they're always here. We'll have Commissioner Caselius back, and that was more my intent, that there not be questions today and not hers, but she's always been very available. But Representative Woodard, I will promise you plenty of time for discussion.
Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.